Welcome to a Veterans Podcast, powered by Wisconsin Veterans Network, the show where we hear unique, inspiring stories from veterans all over. Veterans who've transitioned, who've overcome obstacles, and even those still struggling. We will learn all veterans have a unique story, ones filled with pain and triumphs, and we will learn no veteran is alone, no matter the path they took. We share their stories to help motivate and inspire the world, to help understand what it means to be a veteran, and most of all, we share to give them a voice amongst the noise. You can find us at aveteranspodcast.com to learn more and how you can be a part of the show. Welcome back, everybody, to a Veterans Podcast. My name is Kelsey, and I'm glad you're here. It is the last day of 2020. Geez, what a year, right? So I'm excited to record this podcast, and obviously you guys will hear it in 2021, but I think this year has been really great. I think our podcast has reached a lot of veterans and active duty, and I think that we're doing big things here at a Veterans Podcast. And I want to invite you, if you want to tell your story in 2021, to please reach out to us. You can find us on Facebook at A Veterans Podcast or on Instagram, and we're even on TikTok. So find us, add us, like us, repost us, share us, tell your friends about us, because we would love to reach the community far and wide. So today, we have a really cool guest. Her name is Major Toni Grimes, retired. She served from 91 to 2011 in the Army. She was enlisted from 91 to 95 and then was commissioned in 96 and served until 2011. So her story is super unique, just like every other veteran that we've had on the show. And I'm really excited to share it with you. So before we get started, today's show is sponsored by Wisconsin Veterans Network, an established Wisconsin nonprofit ran by veterans for veterans. Their mission is to provide guidance and support for all veterans, whether guard, reserve, active, or even a bad discharge, looking for any kind of assistance in the state of Wisconsin. If you're a Wisconsin veteran looking for an answer, whether a simple question about benefits or are currently homeless, give them a call today. You can find out more information about them at wisvetsnet.org or at aveteranspodcast.com. All right, let's give Toni a call.
Hello.
Hi, is this Toni?
Yes, it is.
Hey, welcome to a Veterans Podcast. We're so glad you could join us.
Oh, no, thank you. It's my honor.
I'm super excited to have you on the show today. I briefly, before we got you on the line, spoke about when you served and that you were in the Army. But I'd love to just jump right in and ask why you joined the military and why you chose the Army.
Okay, well, I initially got a scholarship to go to the University of Arizona, and it was a full ride academic scholarship. But I was 17, young and dumb, and did not utilize my scholarship to the best of my abilities, and I lost it first semester. And the school said that, you know, we'll cover the rest of this year, but not the next 3 years. So I had to come up with a game plan because my parents told me when I was in high school that they weren't able to pay for me to go to college. So my high school recruiter kept calling, and around Thanksgiving, he had called to see how things were going, and I told him that I lost my scholarship, and that's when he told me about the Army Reserve. And he said that, you know, I could go into the Army, still go to school, but I'll be able to use the GI Bill to help pay for school. So I enlisted in December of 1991. And he also told me, hey, you know, at your school, there's ROTC, and they have a physical training program. So you could take that class to get ready for basic training that summer. So I did so, and I did my first PT test, which was horrible. I believe I did like maybe like 5 push-ups in 2 minutes. I barely did like 20 sit-ups, and my run was like 20 minutes. But I sprinted at the end because I was a sprinter in high school. Mm-hmm. And the command sergeant major came up to me and said, "Cadet, you know, you did great." And I'm like, "Sergeant Major, no, I didn't." He's like, "Let's have a talk." And so later that day, I went to his office, and he told me about the simultaneous membership program. He's like, "You know, you're already in the reserves, you already have a commitment, and you're in college. Why not put the two together and become an officer?" So that's how that part happened. I chose the Army because my dad was a World War II vet.
That's cool.
And so I ended up choosing it because of that. That's how I got into it. Mm-hmm. I looked at other branches, but the Army kind of was calling me. And then also I did need money for school too. So. Yeah.
Which never hurts, right? I think a lot of people join the military because it pays for schooling in the long run. So I don't think you're alone in that choice. So I always find it fascinating when I talk to somebody who served prior to 9/11, because the military was much different than after September 11th. So where were you on September 11th, 2001, and how did that impact your career?
Oh, my goodness. Well, like you said, when I came in, it was during Desert Storm. And when I got on active duty as an officer, we were, you know, it was pretty easy going per se. You know, the worst place to go to at that time was like Korea. Mm-hmm. But on 9/11, I was actually at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and I was going through my last school before I was my captain's career course. And I remember we were in our small groups doing classwork, and our commanding officer of the school, he came into the classroom. He's like, turn on the TVs. And I remember, you know, we turned it on, and you know, we saw the first Twin Tower, and we just sat there and all like, oh crap, you know. And he said, "Our world as we know it will forever change." Mm-hmm. And you know, from that moment on, it definitely has changed.
Yeah, for sure. So why did you get out of the military, and was it your choice?
Well, I was diagnosed with lupus, mm-hmm. which is an autoimmune disease that affects your body. It's like your immune system is attacking itself. It does not know the difference between healthy cells and the bad cells. And I was in about 15 years at that time, and I was having problems breathing. When I was at another military school getting ready to go to my first deployment to Iraq. And I went to the primary care, and they did a chest x-ray and saw that I had fluid around my lungs. And they sent me off to Portsmouth to go get to see a pulmonologist. And he did the thoracentesis, where they take a long needle and they put it in between your ribs to your lung to draw. Oh, God, it was bad.
Oh. That sounds awful.
Never want to do it again. it was definitely different. They sucked out like three big volumes of fluid to test it. And he's like, you know, no big deal. Fluid around the lung, it happens to people. We'll see you in a month for a follow-up, you know? Mm-hmm. And I went back, and they were like, yeah, I tested positive for this anti-nuclear antibody. And, you know, in my mind, I've always been a healthy person. Mm-hmm. I literally took birth control and one allergy med. That was it. And I was like, just give me the pill. I got to get ready for this appointment. You know, give me whatever meds I need to take so I can get rid of this so we could move on. And he rushed me over to the rheumatologist. He's like, no, you need to get seen today, because I was getting ready to PCS to another school. Mm-hmm. And they got me in, and they put in a request for labs, and I got like 16 vials of blood drawn. And I was just like, I had no clue what was going on. They handed me this lab list, and it was this mumbo jumbo, just a bunch of letters. And I remember sitting there, and the lady's taking all these vials, and I'm like, you know, what is this? I'm used to like getting up a vial of blood done, like, you know, your normal CBC. So they rushed the order. I go back to the rheumatologist, and they confirmed all 16 vials. Every test I took was positive for lupus. And so, you know, I didn't know anything about lupus. No one in my family had it. So I was just like, okay, so give me the meds because I got to go on my first appointment. You know, just, come on, let's just hurry this up. And the doctor, you know, explained a lot of things. And she's like, you got to be put on anti-malaria drugs. You have to be monitored, you know, yada, yada, yada. And this is just like wah, wah, wah coming into me.
Yeah.
And so I went to my next school. I was at Fort Meade, Maryland, and I saw a pulmonologist at Walter Reed, and I had to do another thoracentesis where they threw 1.5 liters of fluid off my lungs.
Oh, my goodness.
And I remember I asked the doc, I'm like, hey, you know, do I need to be like, do I need to stay overnight? Or am I good? He's like, no, you're good. I'm like, are you sure? Because it was Friday at like 15:30. And I said, okay. I go, well, I'm going out with my cousin and we're going to go have sushi and sake bombers. He's like, no, have fun. Enjoy your weekend. So I meet up with my cousin and literally 12 hours later, I stayed the night at her place because I had a little bit too much sake. and so at 3 a.m, I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't breathe. I had to text her, and she was 3 bedroom doors down from me. And I was like, you got to come take me to the hospital. And all that fluid came back in some, and it eventually collapsed my lung. And so I had to stay in the hospital during this military school for like a week. And I eventually got my lung fixed, but they were like, since you're an officer, we're going to just send you to your next duty station. You know, because we don't know right now, we have so many people coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. We don't know how long, you know, you're going to be here and we need those beds. And so I got to Fort Campbell and I eventually found a doctor that could do the surgery. And my unit deployed the day I had surgery.
So I
ended up going to the division headquarters after I came off recovery and deployed to Afghanistan instead. So my lupus kind of started taking over my life. I got medevac back to the States because I, at the time, I was having a lot of low back pain. And I had went to the aid station and all this, and they did x-rays thinking it was lower lumbar. But after I got medevac back, I was still having this pain, and I was seeing a rheumatologist regularly. And I kept telling them, you know, I'm having this lower back pain. It's been on my left side. I mean, I passed out in front of my soldiers, and he was just like, people with lupus don't have lower back pain. And I'm like, well, this person does. And after three months of getting labs done, he was just like, we need to see a nephrologist. Now, mind you, I'm used to seeing a primary care.
Yeah.
I have so many ologists now. It's unbelievable. So I'm like, you know, what the hell is a nephrologist? So we go over there and he pretty much hands me off. And the doc's like, you know, I don't know how you are still standing. He's like, you're spilling so much protein. You should not be alive.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, we need to do a kidney biopsy, like ASAP. And I was just like, can we get my husband here? Because he was stationed at Fort Campbell. And I got medevac back to Fort Gordon eventually because they had rheumatology care there.
Mm-hmm.
And, they did the biopsy, and I ended up having stage 3 kidney disease, which led into stage 4. And so I went through a medical board at that time. So that was definitely different. I didn't want to get out, and so I fought. But the medical board said that I went through the whole process of, you know, preparing to get out.
Mm-hmm.
But in my heart of hearts, I was just like, I want to do whatever I can. I mean, I was trying to stay in service because, you know, I wanted to do 20 years.
Yeah.
But it wasn't my choice. Eventually, I did get fit for duty and with a non-deployment status. And so I was able to move on to another job. I worked at in Dallas at the Army Air Force Exchange Service as the Chief of Public Affairs.
Oh, look at you. And fancy pants.
It was great because, you know, the Army bases, we don't have a lot of great resources immediately right outside the base. Mm-hmm. So to go from some of the bases I've been to Dallas, where it's like, oh my God, I could have a life. I could go to concerts. I could go to a mall and not to drive an hour or two to get there, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was actually great. Things were going awesome. But then I was just doing too much.
Yeah,
I was traveling a lot for work. I was TDY going overseas, and I was in school working on a master's. I started getting involved with the Lupus Foundation in Texas, and then my body just said no. And I ended up getting diagnosed with neuropsychiatric lupus and psychosis with my PTSD. So I ended up getting hospitalized for 6 months in a semi-vegetative state.
Oh my goodness.
I had to learn how to walk, talk, and write again. And, you know, being in the military, we're so used to leading mm-hmm. and being in charge. And, you know, for those 6 months, I just laid there. Like, people would come in and talk to me, and I had no clue because mentally I just wasn't there. And so I went through a second medical board, and I was still trying to stand. I was telling the doc, like, hey, I want to do AGR because at this point I was, like, coming up on, like, I was, like, around 18 years. Mm-hmm. of service. And I was just like, no, I'm staying. You understand. And they were just like, I remember my rheumatologist at the time, like after I finally got out of the hospital, I was literally going to the hospital daily and having multiple appointments with all these ologists, you know. And my rheumatologist sat me down and she's like, Major Grimes, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to stay in service. She's like, you can't carry a weapon and you can't lead soldiers. So, and that crushed me because yeah. From the age of 19, this was my career, mm-hmm. you know, so that was just really, really tough. So basically, lupus ultimately ended it for me. And it was ironic because I was going through my second medical board and my promotion board at the same time. And the medical board won out.
That's crazy. I know exactly how you feel. I mean, so when I found out I had heart disease and the doctor was like, your career in the Navy is over. That's literally what he said to me. I was like, but wait a second. You don't get to tell me that. Like, this is, like, I'm going to do 20 and we're going to figure this out. And then, like you said, the medical board won. And that's tough, especially in a leadership role. I can imagine that you felt pretty helpless at that point, which probably didn't really help with your recovery because not only are you dealing with this new disease that you are learning about, but you don't know a whole lot about, but now you're also having to kind of focus on the fact that this dream that you had is now over.
Yeah. And I think that's probably what was the worst because during this time I went through a divorce, my career is being taken from me. I went through my first medical board and they were only going to give me 10% and like $150,000 seventh pay.
What?
And I'm like, I've been in 17 years, $150,000.
That's crazy. Like,
luckily I had a JAG officer who was like, no, take the fit for duty. If you feel that in 6 months after you get your next duty station, you can't do your job, request another medical board. But like I said, when I got to my next job, it was great because I had, I had access to great care. The job was awesome, but the stress went out. And that's the one thing, in the military, we go through so many stressors that, the average Joe, the average person does not have a clue about. And, we don't realize how much stress is on our body until it takes us out. Mm-hmm. And, and that's pretty much what happened to me.
That's so true. So because you kind of did like multiple med boards and kind of in the back of your head, whether you wanted to admit it or not, you knew kind of like you were coming to the end of your career and stuff. Did you do anything to prepare for your transition or did you not really have that opportunity?
Well, it was kind of weird because I had like the first med board, because I was there for about 9 to 10 months. They had me go through the whole process. I went through the ACAP, the Army Career and Alumni Program. And, so I did all the, all the stuff of writing my resume. And, because at that time my resume was like, okay, I was a combat medic. Okay, I got commissioned. I was an engineer officer, So I didn't have you know, the typical resume. So we worked on that. I actually interviewed for jobs and I actually got hired on to be a co-manager for Walmart. Because like I said, at the time I was married and my husband at the time was also military. So I was trying to think, what jobs can I get that will be transportable? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's always a Walmart at a military base, right? Yeah, it doesn't matter how big or small. And so I was like, this is perfect. And, you know, they told me all the great things. Like, you know, you'll be a co-manager for like a year. Then you can get your own store. And here's your income. And I was just like, whoa, this is great. And so, you know, in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, I guess the Army's not for me. And then I get the fit for duty letter. Mm-hmm. And I had literally already told Walmart, like, yes, I was like, all I had to do was like my drug test. Mm-hmm. And I got this, you know, letter saying, nope, we're going to keep you. And I was like, what? And so I had to kind of get back in that mindset of, okay, I still have a uniform on. Mm-hmm. And I was grateful for that. But during this time, I had already gotten a master's degree, but I was an engineer officer. And then I transitioned to my function area of public affairs. Mm-hmm. And my master's degree was in community health care with wellness promotion. And I never did that job. And it hit me like crap. You know, I'm getting out of the Army and I don't really have a plan because I was an engineer officer, but I didn't have an engineer degree. Mm-hmm. It was just the needs of the Army at the time I got in the commission. And so I was like, wait a minute, I don't really have good job perspective. I mean, yeah, I have leadership roles, mm-hmm. but I can't go out and say, I'm going to go work at this engineer firm. So during that first med board, I was like, I need to get another degree. And being public affairs, I was getting my degree in strategic communication and marketing. And I was like really going balls to the wall with it because like it scared me like, hey, I don't have a transition plan.
Yeah.
And I almost got kicked out. And I'm at 17 years. I probably need to start thinking about this since I didn't use my first master's. Mm-hmm. So the second time around, I was really, you know, going at it. And I was like 3 classes away from getting my master's. But, you know, when everything happened to my brain with the lupus, I couldn't even write, let alone comprehend. I had aphasia where I couldn't remember words. And I still have that problem. And, you know, that was back in 2010 happened. So yeah, transitioning out the second time was a lot different because I didn't go to ACAP. I didn't, you know, I did mm-hmm. the minimum stuff, but really all my doctors are like, Tony, you need to focus on your health. And so that's what the first year after retirement was just being at the VA all the time. It was so bad that I would meet people and they were like, hey, so you work at the VA, what department? I'm like, no, I'm just so jacked up that I'm here all the time, every day, all day.
Oh, that's awful. So,
yeah. So that was how I kind of transitioned the second time.
and where were you going to the VA and did you find them to be helpful? Because many people we've had on the show, we've had such mixed reviews, right? Some VAs are awesome and mm-hmm. some are less than awesome. Mm-hmm. But did you find your VA experience, especially as a female, because that's a huge factor that I think people don't realize sometimes. How did you find your experience?
For me, it was really, really different. Because I go to the Phoenix VA and we know, you know, all the background with that from mm-hmm. years ago. And because I was so messed up and they did so many things to save my life because I almost died during that 6 month window. Mm-hmm. They didn't want me using my TRICARE during my terminal leave because they did so many things. I legit had in 6 months in the hospital, I had 10 volumes of medical records. My previous 18 years of service, I had 7. So they were like, you know, we can't let you go home and then you have a flare. And with lupus, a flare is when you have an increase or uptick in disease activity. Mm-hmm. And they're like, because your brain has been affected and your kidneys and all these other things, like we can't let you just be on leave and wait 3 months until you get in the VA. So even before I got out, my mom came out to Dallas and eventually I got down to Fort Hood she was out there with me at Fort Hood for 10 months until I actually transitioned out. And so she had to come back for a doctor's appointment. So I came with her, and my medical team at Fort Hood contacted the VA, and I got assigned to a nurse case manager in the OIF OEF program.
That's awesome.
And they were like, hey, we heard that you're coming back home. We would love to set up an appointment with you so that we could just, you know, get you kind of integrated. And so they met me after hours, and my nurse case manager sat me down, told me about, you know, who my doctors were, walked me to all the clinics, to where I was getting labs done, where I'm going to go get x-rays, all this stuff. And to boot, they gave my mom a gift card for gas for driving me out there.
That's so huge.
So for me, it's different, definitely
yeah.
different.
That's, you know, and that's phenomenal. Really. It's great to hear those stories of success. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Cause I mean, there's so many bad ones, and, you know, and for me, I've had really great providers. Don't get me wrong. I've had to fire some too, but, you know, and that's about advocating for yourself. If you feel you're not getting the answers or the care you need or deserve, or getting the second opinion, you have to fight. And I think right now my team at the VA is phenomenal. And it's just because we all communicate, and I make sure I fight and I have my voice heard. That's really the big thing.
That's awesome. And I'm so glad that you're having a positive experience. And, you know, I think you gave a lot of really good nuggets of information for other people that are listening to find that nurse case manager, right? And I know, like, at the Chicago VA, they have one for the OEF and OIF. And I don't necessarily know that post 9/11 veterans know that. That's really great information. And hopefully whoever's listening says, oh, there we go. Now I know where to go to.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely look for those clinics in your VAs, because I mean, they're such great help in getting you the right resources. And I think that's one of the big things that's so hard for veterans, is that, you know, sometimes we are pissed off when we go in there, mm-hmm. because it's not always a fun experience. You've got long lines, your appointments aren't on time. And I'm not saying that, you know, all my appointments are on time, because that's far from the truth. I mean, there's times I'll wait for my doctor for 2 hours. But mm-hmm. the thing is, I know when I get in that doctor's office, she's not rushing me out. Mm-hmm. She's giving all her patients the same amount of time. So, you know, I've been with her for 10 years. She's got my lupus totally under control, you know. And so I just know part of the game is I'm going to sit and wait. So I bring a good book. I listen to a podcast. I bring snacks. And I just wait till my name's called, you know.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. I think sometimes we as veterans forget, especially once you've been out for a little while, you forget about that hurry up and wait aspect, right? Because if you're an hour late for your appointment, game over.
Oh, God. But, oh, God, yeah.
But
you
they can be.
No more.
Yeah. So I think sometimes we forget about that. And I think that that's a good way to kind of focus on that situation. You know, download an episode of a veterans podcast. You can listen to somebody else tell their story and laugh about their VA experience or whatever the case may be. But I think that's a good attitude to have going into the VA, because that can be a very frustrating place for a lot of veterans. I've had some not so awesome experiences at the VA, but I've also had some really great ones too. So I think just keeping that in perspective is so important.
Oh, yeah. And you got to prepare yourself going there. You got to put on your war battle, because you're going to have good days. You're going to have somebody who's going to be an ass. You know, something's going to happen. I mean, it's never going to be perfect.
When they ask you for your husband's social.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That could be a whole different podcast.
It could be. Lord, that is so accurate.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
you've given so much good advice so far, so I feel like I can like bypass some of these questions, cause you're just killing it. What are some resources that you have found especially helpful during or after your transition? Cause I know we met through Wounded Warrior Project.
Yes.
on a Project Odyssey, which is like a retreat, for lack of better words. And it was all female. It was super cool. I learned a lot about myself. You were like a peer leader. And you taught me how to do yoga, which was interesting in itself. I will never forget that. That was one of those moments, you know? But what resources did you find helpful during your transition?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I would say one of the first things I did when I got out was, because, you know, we're so used to having a team, having a mission, having our core folks around us. And when you get in the civilian world, it's so different. It's dog-eat-dog, you know? And when you're in, we have a mission. We have a purpose. So I really had to kind of find that again. Because like that whole first year was my mission was me trying to heal. And so I joined a ton of veteran service organizations in my area and just started getting involved. Mm-hmm. You know, first it started off me just attending a meeting. Next thing you know, I was taking on roles within those different organizations and getting to know other veterans. And so that was really helpful during my transition because, you know, when you're stationed at Fort Bragg, you know, I'm in an engineer unit, so I know I got my folks. Mm-hmm. But when you come out here, and especially being a female, you know, because a lot of females, we don't identify as being a veteran when we get out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I did find some female veterans organizations and, you know, got involved. And then, you know, there was a lot of programs, like you mentioned, Kelsey, like Wounded Warrior Project. And there's so many nonprofit veterans organizations that do retreats, that do different programs that pay. I mean, like I went on so many different retreats to heal myself. Mm-hmm. You know, like Lone Survivor was one. There was also retreats to do sport activities. Like I went and did Wounded Warrior Tennis Camp. Never thought I would play tennis. And it was a great, you know, a great thing. Didn't look so cute doing it, but hey, it was a lot of fun. You know, I would say one of the other big things for me that was awesome was getting involved in like the VA adaptive sports program. Cause you know, when we're in, we're physically active. And growing up, I played sports all my life, played semi-pro, indoor soccer in college, all this stuff. But, you know, if you come out and you are disabled or labeled disabled, you are just like, wait, I can't do. Like, I remember the first time I tried to do a push-up when I was still, like, I was in the end of my out processing. And I remember I was in my room and I went down to my knees and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do some push-ups because I used to be that stud scoring 300 plus in my PT test.
You go, girl.
And I couldn't even do I couldn't even do one push-up. And I was just like, what the hell? Because I put on all this weight because I'm on medication. And so I thought, you know, I'm never going to be able to do that stuff. And now I am doing like adaptive golf and I'm hiking and doing all things through the VA, you know, and then also there's other organizations that do these things too. Like I've gone on ski trips and horseback riding and did stand up paddleboard yoga, you know, so
I can barely
involved.
Do yoga on the floor, much less on a paddleboard. Are you for real right now? What
oh,
in
God.
The world?
It was kind of interesting. It was very interesting. A lot of core work. Look. And the water was cold. So that was my big thing of, okay, I'm not falling in.
That's crazy.
I'm not falling in. So.
So where at the VA did you find this adaptive sports thing? Because I think that's a really cool resource. I've never heard of that. So where do you kind of get connected with that?
Okay, so usually it would be connected as part of your rec therapy program. And so like at our VA, you first have to get a consult from your primary care going to both adaptive sports and to rec therapy. And so because it's under the mental health umbrella. Mm. And so both programs do a lot of great things. Like, you know, with rec therapy, I did art therapy, music therapy. I mean, just an array of stuff. They have other things like Tai Chi and yoga. And I keep coming back to yoga, Kelsey. It's a theme.
It's not you happening. Gotta,
look, in 2020, you know, we have to really get mindful with everything. But with the adaptive sports program, they'll bring you in and do a consult. And I remember they sat down with me and was like, okay, what did you used to do before you got injured or disabled? And I was like, you know, I played soccer, I ran track, I this and this and that. And they're like, okay, what are some of the things you want to try? And so, you know, I did bocce ball and pickleball and, you know, golf. Like now I love golfing, and it's all because of these adaptive sports programs
That's awesome.
I was able to do. And, you know, and so they do a lot of things at RVA, but there's also national games. Mm-hmm. Like I was able to go to Valor games, and they have summer and winter sports games, and the T tournament, which is a golf tournament that was initially started for visually impaired veterans during Vietnam. And now what they do is they bring veterans together to play golf. And, you know, it's like a week long event, and with the Iowa City VA and the DAV.
Oh, wow.
And it's, yeah, I mean, it was awesome. There was like so many volunteers being golf buddies. She played golf like most of the days, and then you had a day to do other sports like horseback riding or you know, going kayaking, or even deep, you know, even going fishing and stuff. So
that's,
you know,
cool.
There's so many programs with it, and then you get to meet other veterans like yourself who, you know, we're all a little, you know, dysfunctional. It's a great family we have, but you know, you get to get back with your people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cool because, you know, when you start going to these programs, you start seeing some of the same people, you start making relationships, and it's a great way to, you know, get involved again. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, I thought I was doing well by doing like a soldier ride with Wounded Warrior Project and riding a bike 30 miles, but you're out here, you know, golfing off a paddleboard while doing yoga. So I got high aspirations for 2021 because you're out here doing it all. And I'm about as good at golf as I am at yoga. So I got a lot of room for improvement in the coming year. So I might have to add that to my list of things to accomplish. So.
Hey, but there's a program for you.
Yeah.
Because I actually went and did, because I did golf through Wounded Warrior Program. Mm-hmm. And then got connected to the VA, and they work with the PGA Hope program that gives free golf lessons. And then once you do X amount of classes, you get a card and become a member, and you get discount on golf.
Ooh.
And like I have some golf courses in my community that give free golf to veterans. And
oh.
Then another program I did was the Loop Military Golf Organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's really big back east, but like I live in Phoenix, and so we don't have a chapter here. But they have the American Golfers Program, which is underneath that, where they'll give you 6 free lessons with a pro in your area, and then they fit you for tailor-made golf clubs.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, yeah, so it's funny. My boyfriend's a big-time avid golfer, and when my order started coming in, he's looking, he's like, do you realize how much does this cost? And, you know, I don't know, because I picked up a set, like, at a Sports Authority when
yeah,
it was
right?
going out of
like
business
the beginner
for, like,
set?
$50. Yes. You know, but so there's so many programs out there that's willing to not one, teach you the sport, mm-hmm. but to provide you the equipment and other training resources and things.
That's awesome. Wow. That's a lot of really cool resources. I'm really excited. Like I'm about to go and Google all of these when I get off the phone or when I get off this podcast with you, because I'm intrigued, and my fiance is a big golfer, and I'm an awful golfer, but I go because I like to ride in the golf cart and partake in the beverages. So
yeah. I hear you on that one.
So maybe I practice a little bit and then I'll surprise them. It'll be good.
Yeah, you definitely should. It's worth it.
So, okay. So to finish this up here, because I could talk to you for hours, but I feel like our listeners would get bored after a while. They'd be like, these two. What is a piece of advice that you would give somebody who is transitioning out of the military, whether it's for medical reasons or they just finished their contract or they're retiring? Like, what's a big piece of advice that you wish you knew before you got out?
I would say the big thing would be 3 areas. Get your schooling or have an idea of what you want to do, whether you're taking some classes while you're in service, or if you get a full-on degree, or if you're using your job in the military to get a job. You know, that's really big. Because like I said, when I first started transitioning, I realized, oh, crap, that degree I got, I don't have no experience in it. So who's going to hire me?
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. Paying off debt, that's another big thing. because with my lupus and the way it attacked my brain, you do irrational things. And I went and put $30,000 on an American Express credit card. Oof. For furniture. I was going to go buy a bed and came out with a whole new house.
Oh, that's exciting. Of furniture.
Yeah, it was because right after my divorce and stuff. So I was like, I'm going to get all new. But, you know, the whole thing is with the American Express, you're supposed to pay it all at the end of the month. So, yeah. So that was one thing my brain at the time, my lupus brain could not wrap around. Mm-hmm. So I would say to anybody, make sure you have your debt under control. And, you know, definitely savings and investments, because you might get out and might not get a job right off the bat, or might not get that perfect job, or you might get out as being disabled and can't work. And that was stressful, because having that $30,000 credit card bill over my head put more stress on me. And with lupus, stress is the worst thing for lupus. Mm-hmm. So I would say basically, you know, you got to get your life together before getting out. Like, there's so many little pieces. Like, I know a lot of people, whether they're just transitioning out, they're like, screw the military, I'm ready to get out. But when you get out there, you're like, wait, I don't have a roof over my head. That money they were giving me for BAS for food is now gone. Mm-hmm. I don't have the insurance. So there's a lot of things I would say, just kind of those three areas: school, debt reduction, and saving and investing, you know, for those rainy days in between you getting a new job or just totally transitioning out because of disability.
That's great. Well, Tony, thank you so much for doing this podcast with me. I think you really shared a lot of awesome information. Not only that's helpful to me, but I'm sure helpful to all the listeners that will hear your story and hear how you've kind of overcome that adversity and just done so well for yourself at this point. I kind of Facebook stalk your journey.
You're one of those.
Yeah. I like all your posts. I'm like, oh yay, look at her go. So, you know, I think it's important for our listeners to know too, that not only are you advocating for all these veteran things, but you are a strong advocate for lupus, and you, you know, you're talking to like Congress people and senators and all these really important people, and you're getting the word out. And I think that that's really admirable. So thank you for doing that too, because, you know, I have people in my life that are touched by lupus, and it's important, right? We need to find a cure and we need to get this under control. So thank you for everything today. This is really great.
It's my honor.
And, you know, I look forward to reconnecting with you at a Wounded Warrior event when life is safe and healthy again for all of us.
Yes, definitely. Kelsey, thank you so much. It was, you know, great being on. And, you know, I would say just the last thing I would say is, you know, to anybody who's getting ready to transition, you know, just enjoy the ride. And you're going to have ups and downs, but, you know, it's your life to enjoy. And you're the one who's going to make it the most, whether we have bad episodes at the VA or we have a great one. So it's your journey.
Well, thank you. That's perfect. That's a great way to end it. So you have a great evening and a happy new year. And we'll reconnect soon.
All right. Thanks.
Yep. Bye. Well, that was awesome. I hope that all of you found some resources in this podcast. I think Tony gave a lot of really, really good information, and I'm so grateful she came on. As I find links and information to what she was talking about as far as adaptive sports and different organizations and stuff, I will post it on our Facebook page, A Veterans Podcast, and on our Instagram, A Veterans Podcast, just to get that information out. So thank you so much for listening today. To learn more about us or to hear previous episodes, or if you are interested in being on the show, you can find us at aveteranspodcast.com. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Wisconsin Veterans Network, a Wisconsin nonprofit operated by veterans and serving veterans in need. Till next time.